Kevin Arant is with the Alabama Marine Fisheries, and he's with us now to talk about some things going on out there. How you doing, Kevin?
I'm doing really good. It's Kevin Anson, by the way.
Anson, I'm sorry?
Yep.
Okay, Kevin, tell us about the snapper closure, how that happened, why that happened, and is it a good thing or a bad thing?
Well, it happened because we are, in 2018 and 2019, we're working under an exempted fishing permit from the National Marine Fisheries Service. And basically, one of the requirements of the permit that allows us to set the season is that we have to stay within a fixed number of pounds in both years. And that number of pounds is approximately 985,000 for a harvest of red snapper from vessels that are private vessels or private anglers, as well as those anglers on state licensed charter boats that are guide boats that just fish in state waters. So we monitor the landings this year, as we've had for the last 4 years before that, with the snapper check program. That's the mandatory reporting program for anglers that are landing red snapper in Alabama. They must report those landings. So we have been monitoring those throughout the 2018 season, and we came up with an estimate of the harvest that showed that we're going to meet those 985,000 pounds.
Well, Kevin, if you go to Billy Goat Hole on just about any weekend for the last couple of months, and you see how many boats are launching out of Dolphin Island, the same thing over in Orange Beach, you realize just how many people are going out there. Y'all got a heck of a large job on your hands in doing this. If I heard you correctly, though, you said that the quota in terms of tonnage is going to be the same next year as it was this year.
That is correct, and there is a payback provision for the 2018 season. Again, we only have it for 2 years, so if we were to go over the quota, then the difference in what we went over or estimated to go over plus what was allowed, that difference would be taken off of next year. So it may be a little less next year because of the payback provision.
So we had Scott on the show earlier this year, and we were talking about snapper check, and he, you know, said that basically make sure you are reporting your fish because you have the historical data of the percentage of fish that were being reported, and if there was an under-reporting, so to speak, then y'all would take that into effect for your models. Am I remembering that correctly?
That is correct, yeah. We knew when we started the program that not everyone would report their snapper if they caught and brought them back to Alabama, and not saying that everybody or people out there are trying to break the law, it's just that we knew people would be, you know, visitors coming from the state or folks from up northern part of the state, they just are not in the information pipeline like a lot of folks here on the coast. And so we knew there would be a certain segment of the population of fishermen that would not be reporting. So we had to come up with a method to estimate what that proportion of the anglers were that were not reporting and then account for those pounds that way.
So how did the anglers do in 2018 compared to historical data? Was there an under reporting compared to the last few years? Was it on par with what had been done?
It appears that it's very close, within a few percentage points of what has historically we've estimated to be either the reporting rate or estimated to be the under reporting rate, and that's about 35% from what we can tell from the data collected thus far, which includes samples from this last weekend through Sunday. So it's on par with that. There's a little bump in an increase in the number of reports or the reports that were coming in for the state charter boats, the guide boats. They had an improvement over past years on their reporting rate.
What about the size of the fish? How did that play into your model?
So we estimated an average weight of the fish last year or prior to this season based on the previous season's harvest. And, you know, that is that's one of the difficult pieces of the puzzle, if you will, or the model, is to estimate that catch, because obviously the weight of fish is very important in estimation of the harvest. And so we used a weight, I believe, that was slightly higher than last year's average weight, just to try to mitigate for any changes in what that weight could be. There might be an angler preference there as far as them wanting larger fish. This year, I think what had happened was that the weather was much nicer in general than it was in last year, and so people were able to go out farther from shore, and they going farther from shore, they're able to access larger and more numerous larger fish, and so the average weight was a little higher than what we anticipated. It ended up being just over 8 pounds, about 8.1 pounds as it stands today.
That's an amazing average. I mean, from historically fishing this area, you know, an 8 pound snapper used to be a big fish for the day. You know, maybe you'd catch one bigger than that, but that was all. I mean, it's amazing that that was an average. That's unbelievable. talking about next year, are we looking at most likely the same type of structure where you're going to say weekends, you know, throughout the summer is going to be the allotted time frame, and then, you know, with an early closure if quota is reached early? Or do you think this will lead to any changes for 2019?
You know, it's a little too early to tell. Scott and I were talking about that on Monday when we were reviewing the numbers and kind of looking ahead to see how we might set up the season for next year. So, you know, it's still too early to say from where I'm sitting right now is to say whether or not we'll continue with the three-day season, whether or not we'll continue with a extended week or that whole week around 4th of July. We'll just have to kind of really look at the data and you know, get some feedback from folks in the fall and during the winter and see if there are folks that are interested in other changes. But it's been very popular from what we've heard with the three-day format as it stands.
Stepping back from this and looking at the big picture just kind of tells me that the state can manage this fishery much better than the federal government, and that's just an opinion that I have, but seems like you guys are proving my point.
Well, appreciate the kind words, and, you know, that was kind of the feeling amongst the states. Was that, you know, with the EFPs was to give the states a little bit more opportunity to kind of set the season again. We're all of us are against a quota, and trying to manage the season against that quota individually for each state. And, but certainly, you know, having the opportunity, to do this, you know, would allay hopefully any fears or concerns that people would have that, you know, the states couldn't, manage to a quota and stay within or near that quota. So it's something that we feel like we've been fairly successful as, and, you know, as far as what it does to the impact of the fishery, I think we'll need at least another year, you know, even maybe a couple of years beyond that to monitor that relative to assessments and the public's perception.
Good. Changing subjects a little bit, we've had tremendous interest in information about the flounder hatchery that you guys have planned. Can you give us an update on that?
Certainly. So we have our hatchery here in Gulf Shores at our office in Gulf Shores. It's the Claude Petit Mariculture Center. It's been here since the mid-70s. But we had some infrastructure renovations a few years ago, and we started with Red Drum, and we've been doing Florida Pompano as well and having fairly good success in the last couple of years. And with the downturn, I'm sure a lot of people that are inshore fishing have noted southern flounder populations have kind of taken a hit here in the last 5-7 years. And so we're looking at including southern flounder in our production program. And so right now we're trying to acquire broodstock, and we need to acquire some different equipment, some tanks and some chillers, because the larval flounder require colder water. They spawn in December, January, and so they need much colder water than we can supply right now. So we're looking at getting that, and we're actually working with CCA, the Alabama chapter, and they're going to be providing funds for us to acquire those extra tanks and chillers and equipment that we would need to conduct that larval rearing. So we hope to get all that acquired and in place by the winter. And it does take a while for the broodstock to acclimate, though. Other people have done southern flounder. Texas is doing a southern flounder right now. And their experience has shown that it generally takes a year, maybe a year and a half, for the the flounder to become acclimated and actually start producing fish. So maybe by this time or next winter, we should hopefully, if we're successful, we'll have our first spawn with those in that program.
Well, we're about to take a commercial break, but before we do, if folks have an interest in learning more about Claude Petit and maybe what they can do to contribute to maybe the brood stock for the flounder hatchery, where can they find that information?
Well, we don't have anything on a web page per se related to that, but if they call us here at the Gulf Shores office and ask for Max Westendorf or the hatchery manager, we certainly are. We'll take folks that want to volunteer and collect legal size flounder. We as long as it's during the week, we'll be more than happy to take brood fish.
All right, Kevin Anson with the Alabama Marine Fisheries. Thank you so much.
All right, thank you, gentlemen.
We've got a special guest in the studio with us today, Mr. Rick Frederick with the Mobile Bay National Estuary Program. We all know that we've got the Alabama Deep Sea Fishing Rodeo coming up this weekend. And, Rick, I was on my way down to Dolphin Island yesterday, and I'm driving along the causeway there, and I see this big banner that says Trash Blows.
Good. Glad you saw it.
Yeah. And so there's a picture of a pickup truck pulling a boat. And, you know, it's a little something that maybe a lot of folks don't think about is that whatever you put in the back of your truck, which we know we drive a lot of trucks in this area.
That's right.
Whatever you put in the back of your boat after a day of fishing or on your way down to the launch is going to end up blowing out. And where does that stuff end up?
Yeah, you know, this is something we've been thinking about for a long time trying to promote. We wanted to promote the truck bed trash and then also the trash blowing out of boats. So where better to do it than the rodeo this weekend? So, yeah, I mean, it's pretty obvious that trash blows out of the back of those boats, out of your truck. It's going to end up on the ground, side of the road, and eventually through stormwater runoff, it's going to end up in a river, stream, eventually in the bay and out in the Gulf. So, you know, we want people to be aware of that and understand, you know, about stormwater runoff. And just because something hits the ground doesn't mean it's going to stay right there and get picked up.
Right. And I'll be honest, you know, I've been driving down the road in my truck and seen the occasional piece of trash that I, you know, forgot about, you know, go blowing out and you go, oh, crap.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it happens to all of us, but it is something we need to be more aware of. And tell me a little bit about some of the litter collection efforts that you've personally witnessed and just how much trash is in and up out there.
Yeah, when you're out there looking at it, you realize we've got to do a better job. And so we've got a program called the Create a Clean Water Future campaign. It's cleanwaterfuture.com. It addresses stormwater runoff and all the issues with stormwater. And obviously trash is one of the big ones. And we spend a lot of time out on like Three Mile Creek and some of the local waterways. And it's just the amount of trash you see when we have heavy rains flowing down those creeks is just unacceptable. And, you know, I were talking earlier, Don Bates with Thompson Engineering has come up with a small stream litter collection device called the Litter Getter. And we've been installing those not only in Three Mile Creek, but also in Dog River watershed and also across the bay in Baldwin County. And, you know, he's keeping data and statistics on the amount of trash he's collecting. And, you know, a plastic bottle, a plastic bag doesn't weigh very much. And when you're collecting hundreds and thousands of pounds of that on a monthly basis, you know, you realize we got to do a better job. So we're promoting the truck bed trash program, Trash Blows. And so you will see signs leading down to the island. You'll see signs and big banners on the island. Matter of fact, we're hustling right now. We've had such good response to it already on social media. We're going to put some more banners up around this weekend. So just to raise awareness, people they think they're stowing it in their trucks, and it's not. It's blowing out when we get down the road. So,
yeah, and a lot of it is not necessarily intentional.
Exactly.
It's just you're doing something, you throw something in the back of your truck, you don't think about it, and then by the time you think about it, it's when you watch it in your rearview mirror.
Definitely.
Going out. So tell me more about what you guys are going to be doing on the island this weekend.
Sure, yeah. We want to thank the town of Dolphin Island, and Mayor Collier's been a great partner with us. But so we're going to have signs leading down DIP and on the island to raise awareness and get people thinking about it. One of the cool things we're also doing is we're going to have a shuttle service Available for anglers at Billy Goat Hole morning and evening. So early morning, late afternoon, we'll have a couple well-marked shuttles out there. So when you go park your trailer, you don't have to hustle back.
Man, that's nice.
Yeah, people are going to like that.
I've been saying for years somebody needed to start up a little business doing that. I mean, the only thing I would add to that is if you could have, like, you know, on a golf course where they have a little beer cooler.
Yeah,
in the
that would be nice.
Like,
well, we would like to arrange that, but I don't think that's going to happen.
All right.
But when we give these shuttle rides, we are going to provide the captains with a bag. There are stash your trash mesh bags that have been real popular. They're yellow. We've been distributing them at marinas and different outlets around the area. So we'll give you a bag. We'll also give you a trash blows or a don't be trashy hugger for your drinks. And so look for us. The vehicles are going to be well marked with flags and signage. So we'll be there starting at like 4 in the morning, I think, and running every morning and in the afternoons. And one of the cool things we're doing around that is we are encouraging boaters and also visitors to the island, take a selfie with your trash bag or with some trash you've collected. If you do Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter on our Clean Water Future pages, take that to the rodeo site. We're partnering with the city, and we've got a place at the table there. And if you show us where you tagged us in that hashtag trash blows, we'll give you a Clean Water Future t-shirt, either a baseball cap, a visor, or a beach towel. So cool. Come see us, and we'll give you some goodies.
Sounds good, Rick. Man, we appreciate all the things you guys do at the estuary.
You bet.
And thanks for being with us today.
You appreciate it. Thank y'all.